Hello, this is the Lightning Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel /Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
And we're back.
And it is Volume 7 of the Linux Show. It's January the 6th, 2004. We are back to kick off our 7th year on the air webcasting the Linux Show, if not every week, just about every week, coming on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. We're here. We've made it through another series of holiday weekends. We're all alive. And going to kick off our Volume 7, our season premiere, with a look back on 2003 in terms of what we feel are the best, the most significant stories of 2003, as well as some prognostications for 2004. I did, in our posting this afternoon to various portals, I made it be known that people who would like to participate in tonight's show but stay on topic, because we do have a topic of sorts, that people could contact me and join us on the panel. And already tonight, we should have joining us tonight, Dennis Powell from Linux in Maine should be calling in. We should have Joe Barr out there. I saw Joe Barr in the IRC under Warthog. And we're going to have Brian Proffitt from Linux Today. And I'm also expecting that sometime during the course of the show, Eric Raymond will call in. So I've got plenty of people who are going to call in and visit us today, giving us their cut on what was the most significant story. I'm sure just about everybody is going to come up with number one on their list being SCO. So hopefully we'll get at least a few other people in there bringing in stories that are non-SCO. We've got the entire crew here tonight, except for Doc. Don't know where Doc is. I'm going to do my best to track him down during the first segment, and I'll catch up with him sooner or later. He's not supposed to be in transit, which is unusual for this time of the evening, so I should have a relatively easy time tracking him down. A couple of maintenance issues that I should talk about. Number one, we are still looking for a couple of mirror sites. We are almost to the point where we are desperate in terms of our pleas of asking someone in the greater Australia, New Zealand market to be a mirror site for us. Every week, our audience in that corner of the world seems to grow, and it's really causing a crimp on the bandwidth, providing people from literally halfway around the globe a nice steady connection. So if there's anybody out there who has bandwidth available, has a server available, setting up as a mirror site is pretty painless. We could also use somebody in the UK as well, so I really need it on both sides of the respective oceans that surround the U.S. So help us out if you have a mind to, and give us a mirror site to spread ourselves around the world. Another maintenance issue, as you should be aware, if you are a regular listener, we are going to be broadcasting live at the Linux World Expo a scant 2 weeks from now. In fact, Kevin and I both roll into town in New York 2 weeks from today. That's the 20th. We're going to be doing our studio setup, and we're going to be broadcasting the 21st, 22nd, 23rd from the Javits Center. That is going to cause some complications. First of all, we may not have all of our equipment available for next week's show, because we have to ship everything out by Tuesday of next week. So we sort of may be running on thin equipment come next week as we pull the studio equipment out that we need to ship over to the Javits Center. Plus, it's a pretty tight setup getting everything put together between Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning. So we are still looking at for people who are in the New York area who are available to give us a hand or to drop us an email at staff@thelinuxshow.com and help us out in getting ourselves set up. This would be a great LUG event as well. If you'd like to come with us and help us set up, and we'll do some partying with your LUG group as well. So enough of general maintenance stuff. Let's go ahead and jump on into segment number one and talk about what we feel are the hot stories of 2003. And while the regular panelists are doing that, I'm going to go and see if I can track down Doc. So, why don't we hand it off to you first, Russ? What is your take on the most significant event for 2003?
Well, I don't know about the most significant event. I think there have been a lot of them, but I picked two stories that I think are very, very important, and we'll probably have a good long lifetime, hopefully, to both of them. The first is the whole business of Munich, Germany, choosing Linux and making a big deal of it. And there's been a whole lot going back and forth about how that's going to play out, et cetera. But I'll tell you, this was the year that the notion of Linux on the desktop got out there, largely because of stories like this. And there's a lot of naysayers and debates and all that sort of junk. But I think this is going to be, this is going to phase us into 2004, where I think by the end of the year, the issue of Linux on the desktop will cease to be an issue. What it will be replaced by the question, should our organization go with Linux on the desktop? I think we are going to go from the phase of doubt and debate to basically product evaluation. So I think the whole Munich story was a huge break for us, in that it brought the very notion to the forefront. And since then, there have been several other stories that kind of follow on to that, including Israel a couple of weeks ago, seemingly following inside a similar sort of pattern. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out, but I think Munich was a real big shot in the arm for the Linux and desktop movement.
I'd be interested in I agree with that, Russ, but one problem with this is we still don't have the OEMs, and that's a bit troublesome for our desktop numbers.
Well, the thing here, once again, is that when you have something that's big and loud like this, I mean, Munich is substantial, and some of the other things that have come along since then are also substantial. That's the thing that's going to get the attention. Oh, it'll be all of us, Eric. It'll be all of us. But the my second choice
is... Hi, this is Doc. I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
I guess Doc is still trying to recover from New Year's.
Doc, the show started.
My second choice for story of the year is Novell. Here you have a company that was dancing on the periphery of the movement, had a couple kind of minor pieces of software out there, and in the matter of a few months swept to center stage. The Zimian acquisition, followed by the SUSE acquisition, and now they've already announced their enterprise services with a capital N. It looks like they're ready to play, and this is going to be an interesting one to follow on in 2004.
I agree. I sort of subtitled this general thread as the surprising dark horse of the year story.
Yep,
it's a big one.
Because it literally, like you said, it really did come out of nowhere. Now, you did know that when they bought Zim that they weren't going to be stopping. You knew something else was up in the mix. But still, it was remarkable not only how deep they penetrated into the market with the two acquisitions that they made, but also how fast they did it. It was really remarkable. And it's also very interesting, you know, the news this week, you know, coming out with Red Hat, now talking that they're going to be getting a war chest together so that they can jump into the acquisition game. It's now a matter of survival for Red Hat to either acquire or be acquired if they anticipate surviving with this kind of wholesale annexation of some of the intellectual, I shouldn't say intellectual property, the mind share property within the pro side of the Linux community. Really impressive story. So, go ahead, Russ.
Well, that's basically it. I think the Novell story is going to be very, very interesting to watch. And I think it also was another one of those little wake-up ones, too, because there's a lot of the, shall we say, the old IT industry that still banked on Novell. There was still a lot of Novell stuff out there. It wasn't regarded with as being bleeding-edge stuff, but it was still backbone, still very much backbone stuff.
Very stable. NetWare has always been stable.
In a lot of corners, it's bread and butter. And for them to say, well, this is the direction, folks, that may well open up the eyes of a lot of IT managers that up until now had been holding back. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
And as we discussed back when this happened, Novell's been dabbling with Unix for some time now, for some number of years, and one could have probably predicted that they would do this, but boy, it sure did. This one was as surprising as the big IBM move, and just as important, I think.
The other thing that I would just throw in too, it was interesting. I had heard for some time how Zimian was trying to survive, you know, financially. I guess they've been having their issues for a while now. And it was kind of good to see that at least they didn't go down for the count inside these tough financial times. Instead, they've probably got more life to them than they've had since they started in a lot of ways. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays.
Okay, well, let's jump over to you, Arnie. What are your hot spots of the year?
Well, I mean, the reason why I didn't send any links is because my hot topics were, first of all, Novell. I was with Russ on that, and he already covered that one. And the other one, is, of course, is the SCO, and we just can't ignore it. SCO is done so much to basically bring the Linux name out into the marketplace. And I don't know whether they realize this, but this has been a heck of a basis for the dialogue on viability of Linux, and that's about all SCO's things have done is bring Linux out into the public, and I think there's been some benefit for us.
I'd like to offer a slightly different angle on this.
Go ahead.
I'd like to suggest that the biggest thing that happened in open source this year was something that didn't happen. Something that conspicuously failed to happen. Something that is huge according to its non-happeningness, which is the complete and utter failure of SCO to produce any actual evidence.
There you go.
Yep. And they have 4 more days to do so.
Yes.
The clock is ticking.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yes. I agree. That was remarkable, and it's nonness or whatever term we used. Completely.
It is null. It is void. It is pushing up daisies. Excuse me. I'll stop with the Python quotes now.
It is an X lawsuit.
That's right.
the funny thing. Yeah, and you're right. And again, this is more good good news and more good press for the Linux side, the open source side. We've weathered all the storms with SCO, and this basically nothing. They haven't laid a glove on us.
Yeah, let me make it explicit why I think that's important, because it means that a predatory company with a lot of sharp lawyers working for it was unable to get any traction on IP accusations. It hasn't worked in the courtroom, and it's not working in the marketplace either. And that, I think, actually think that's the biggest news of this year.
And it is working in the stock market. Their stock went up again today. It's over 18 again. But
But do you think this lawsuit has been depressing the stock prices of Linux companies? Doesn't seem like it.
No, absolutely not. And in fact, IT is looking pretty good these days, but certainly in spite of what SCO is doing.
Now, I'll propose a second candidate for most important event of the year, and this is going to sound weirdly political, but that's not actually my intention. My second candidate for biggest event of the year is Saddam Hussein getting captured. Not because of the immediate political consequences, though that'll be significant, but because I think that's a signal to the rest of the world that we're not going to go to hell in a handbasket, that the corner is being turned in the terror war. And I think that's going to have effects that are indirect but large on the rate at which the economy rebounds and goes back into a significant growth phase.
There's another side of that too, Eric. I've heard this from more than one person,
yeah.
And that is they need IT people in Iraq to put back the infrastructure.
Maybe that's where I have to go to find a job for.
You hear that, guys? Go to Iraq and install some Linux.
All those unemployed sysadmins out there in California to hop on the next train to Baghdad.
Maybe they could get hired by an American company there. I mean, one has to be from another country to get hired.
What will they call it, Eric? The Silicon Dune?
Yeah.
Hey, listen.
Hey, what's sand made of?
Silicon.
Okay, so, it's just silicon dioxide. Anyway, the big thing is what didn't happen. And having dodged that bullet this time, it's hard to see how anyone else can shoot it at us more effectively.
Yeah, well, Eric, interestingly enough, I really enjoyed the humor and the way you opened up talking about the non-ness of SCO, at least so far. And I also took a similar approach when I was trying to pick what was remarkable about this year. And along those same lines, what was also really remarkable was, again, Arnie, this may support your contention that this has been overall really good for the Linux community in the long run, is that all of this noise, this background noise, white noise, whatever you want to call it, that has been created by SCO, has really bumped Microsoft off of the front pages of the IT press. It really wasn't until COMDEX a few weeks ago and this week at CES that, you know, Bill Gates has really even been invited to do too many keynote addresses.
Oh, hey, and by the way, that gives me a third candidate for most significant event of the year. Microsoft's flat quarterly results.
There's another one, yeah.
That's the first time that's ever happened.
Well, first time since the late 1980s.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know about that qualification.
Now, first time since the late 1980s. Remember, they almost went out of business twice. They almost went out of business when Altair went broke. And
I was going to say Mitz.
and then when their contract with Radio Shack expired Phoenix, they almost went broke again. So there was two near fatalities. Both.
That was back.
Yeah, that was way back, but prior to the IBM contract. It's been a long time since Microsoft had a negative quarter or even a flat quarter. It's been
And what this really actually says is their revenues are contracting because everybody knows they've been doing cookie jar accounting for years to keep that smooth rise going.
Yep.
So that means not only are their revenues contracting, but they can't find enough revenues in the kitty to transfer to make it look good. So
yep.
It's actually a lot worse than it looks for them.
Way more worse because it very well may be, looking at the way that they're redirecting resources, they're struggling for a business plan right now.
Yeah.
They're throwing an enormous amount of capital at the development of whatever the next Xbox is going to be.
Xbox? You mean the thing they're selling at a loss?
Yeah, they're hemorrhaging money.
Yeah. Well, they're going to hemorrhage even more money because they're throwing all kinds of money at trying to keep up with Sony and Nintendo. And so it's my whole point here is in this discussion of this non-story of how Microsoft can't seem to get on the front page, is that I think this is a company that in the very not too distant future is gonna see some very, very bleak news in store for them because their cash cows are now flat. Their cash cows relatively soon are gonna start contracting and losing money for them, and I think you're gonna see a company that is gonna be kicking themselves that they didn't let the SEC bust them up when they had the chance.
What about these recent announcements that they're going to produce a Linux distribution? And now, every once in a while, this thing starts bubbling up again. And in the last few weeks, I think I've read about four or five articles of people claiming that they know for an absolute fact that Microsoft has got a Linux distribution in the works.
Well,
and, of course, Microsoft always denies it, and it never happens, at least hasn't yet.
Well, you know, this is one of those things. My stock answer here is that, yeah, it may be in the works. It may actually be in a Skunk Works project somewhere. It will never make it out the door, in my opinion, as long as Gates and Ballmer are in charge.
Well, I wouldn't think not, especially with their recent ad campaign.
Well, because they're the entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs are very reticent to kill their favorite children. And historically, it doesn't happen too well, and I don't think Gates has been any exception there. He has an emotional attachment to the success of Windows. So, hell be damned, he's going to win the world with Windows, I think, at this point.
Yeah, well, I have said this on other shows before. I do have contacts within Microsoft who have told me, point blank, of course I can't put them on the record, but they have told me point blank that there have been meetings, there have been discussions on porting Office to Linux. And this on the basis of a product line decision, just like they ported Office over to the Mac environment. Come the numbers, they will most likely do that because the people at Microsoft, you can say everything you want about Gates and Ballmer, they're not stupid people. They may be obstinate people and at times evil, but they're not stupid.
Yeah, but the second they announce that port, new sales of Windows are going to go on the toilet. Can they look at that consequence?
Exactly. That's the thing. That is the foot off the cliff for Windows.
Yeah, but eventually you're going to be faced with that decision anyways.
But
you've got an enterprise client that's going to install, pick a number, 300,000 desktops, and they're out there, those big companies like that.
Hmm.
And they have the option of saying, okay, we're going to go Linux and Open Office, and Microsoft is going to lose both the operating system and the Office suite.
Interesting point.
You know, they're going to say, wait a minute, guys, we'll give you a really good deal. We happen to have this Linux version of Office that we'll let you have for, $25 a desktop. They're not going to piss away the entire paper tiger.
Well, that feeds into the other long-term problem they have. But sure, they can find a business model The problem is they, I don't think they can find a business model that's going to give them 80% profit margins.
Yeah.
Also, how much is OpenOffice hurting them on their Windows desktop? And that's the other thing, is because OpenOffice works on Windows.
Yep.
And there are people who are not ready to go to Linux, but are more than willing to say Office, and Office is too expensive in porting on the Sun software.
Yeah, well, the other thing, too, is that besides the normal entrepreneurial thing, Gates is one of the richest men in the world. How many times does he lose?
Yeah.
He's not accustomed to it. And that's why, you know, I think the scenario that Jeff's describing could happen. I just don't think that Gates is going to be sitting in the chair when it does.
Mm.
I think he's going to pack it in. I mean, you know, I was a veteran of the deck death that took place, where basically the board of directors had to remove Ken Olson from deck and bring in Bob the Butcher Palmer to return value to the stockholders by carving up the company like a cow meat hook. I wonder, frankly, that if Microsoft stock does begin to do a bona fide dive in the quarters ahead, if there will be any substantial enough pressure to try to push the Gates-Ballmer contingent aside, although they own so much of it, I'm not sure that would be effective.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. They're going to have to go willingly.
But I think the step in that direction that we've been talking about here, I would be utterly astounded if Gates could do it and keep his sanity.
Yep. The smartest thing Gates could do right now is to piss off the SEC and force them into breaking up the company. That would be a good solution for them.
It gives them him an out, too.
Yep.
I have one more. It's okay. Important.
Okay.
And that is Linux's, and this is probably not as important as the Novell, and probably not as important as SCO, but no, Linux has done a phenomenal job of taking over the embedded market, and this could be big, very big. And the inroads in the embedded market have been so strong this last year that I put that up as a pretty important story.
Yeah, I think that's just a game over story all the way around.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Microsoft has got a few irons in that fire too, but we're not seeing anything on anything big guns happening on the Palm and small computer market other than the Zorus. As wonderful as the Zorus is, it's selling, but they're bringing out a new product. But the rest of the embedded market, where we don't see the Linux label or the Windows label, is becoming a very important thing. When how many people know what operating system their cell phones are running?
Yep. We just had call in Brian Proffitt from Linux Today. Brian, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well. Jeff, how are you?
Oh, we're great.
Welcome, Brian.
Hey.
So, Brian, what was the first of all? I'm going to ask you a question, Linux Today related, and then you can tell me what you think was the most important story of the year, and if you have any prognostications. But first of all, what was the biggest story in terms of readership at Linux Today for 2003?
I think the biggest story. Well, I can tell you real quick what the exact story. The biggest set of stories had to be the SCO series of stories. They just completely dominated the readership ranks, and most of the things that had to do with SCO, were up there in that top 50 list. And then the very top one was really the article that Jeremy Allison had contributed to us from the Samba team, and basically he was pointing out that, well, yes, SCO, you're attacking the GPL, but oh, by the way, you're using GPL software in your Unix distribution now. And that one got the most reads for the entire year. That was something like 70,000.
That's huge.
Something insane like that. And it actually made the all-time list as well. Somewhere, I think it's number 11 on the all-time Linux Today list. So it just made a phenomenal readership push.
Okay, and what do you personally think was the most impactful story? Was it what's your personal opinion?
Well, in terms of shaking up the community, obviously this ghost story, and I think right after that would probably be the Novell buying Zimian and then Novell buying SUSE story. The one I thought was important, and I don't know if it's been mentioned yet, but was the way that Red Hat is moving to what I kind of call the Mozilla model, when it pushed everything, non-commercial over to the Fedora distro. I think that's going to be, when we look back on last year, is going to be one of those watershed moments. When these distro companies, the ones that really are intent on making money, are just going to basically, toss off, their quote non-enterprise, software, and let the community deal with it, and they're just going to focus, only on selling and upkeep and support of their. Of what they can actually sell to an enterprise in a box. I would not be surprised if other distribution companies try to follow that model, although I won't really be very happy to see it.
I'll put it more strongly than that. I think that big unified repositories like where Fedora is heading for are the future. That's going to be the primary means of distribution, with CDs being reduced to an auxiliary, something you use to do your initial setup, and thereafter you do all of your upgrades online. I think that's where the distribution market is headed, and I think that the distributors that don't adapt to that model and support apt or yum or the other incremental upgrade tools, they're just going to disappear.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I think, clearly, yeah, Fedora is moving to that model. If, United Linux had gotten off the ground, maybe it could have done something similar. I know that there's, User Linux trying to take off. And, maybe that can be one of those big repositories that you talk about.
Well, Debian's had this technology for years.
Yeah. And I know, here in Indianapolis, Progeny is really working hard to try to pull something together that's Debian-based and get something off the ground there. Now, I'm not entirely sure, but, it's probably no, coincidence that they recently hired Ransom Love to their board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy who came up with the whole United Linux plan. And if you want to play, parallel universe, what would have happened if, to all of us, if Caldera and Sco had not let Ransom go, if he had stayed on? I don't think the landscape would look anything like it does today.
I agree with that. If Ransom had stayed at SCO, at Sco, I really don't think we'd be seeing the Sco lawsuit the way it is.
No, we wouldn't be seeing the Sco lawsuit, and I think we would really be seeing, like him or hate him, I think we would really be seeing a stronger United Linux, because really that was his brainchild, that was his baby, and then once he got kind of passed over or whatever happened, when he left Sco, and United Linux didn't pick him up, that whole idea died a mourning. United Linux is really, right now not a very, potent entity.
It's basically SUSE.
Yeah, it almost always was SUSE,
But now SUSE's Novell.
Uh-huh.
And so that has some profound effects on on exactly what's happening to everybody. We started wondering, Susan Novell bought out SUSE. All the pundits were like screaming, what's with United Linux then?
Well, I don't think United Linux is going to go away because it's too good of a channel. You've got Connectiva in Latin America. You've got Turbo Linux in Asia. I mean, a company would have to be really, you know, nuts to throw those potential sales channels away. But that's really all they're going to be. I hate to sound cynical.
That reminds me, another consequence of the wave of acquisitions we've seen recently. Okay, brace yourselves, because I'm about to say something that's going to get us all flamed to a crisp. I think KDE is headed for the dustbin of history. I'm not saying this because I dislike KDE. I don't. There are parts of it that are superb. KMail, for example, I think is possibly the best GUI mail agent I've ever seen on Linux. The problem is Novell now owns SUSE, which means they own the people who were doing a lot of the heavy lifting on KDE, and they bought Xeon. You think they're going to want to maintain two desktop environments forever?
Well, they just came out with the announcement today that they said that Xeon is going to be fully supported by SUSE.
Yeah.
I mean, they've made that formal announcement.
And what that means is KDE is on the way out. And a lot of people are going to be really pissed off about that. And I'm not happy about it myself. I've always been pretty neutral in the desktop wars. But that's what the handwriting on the wall says to me.
I've always been a strong advocate of diversity in the desktop. And
you know, until recently I agreed with you. Until recently, the fact that we had two competing desktops didn't bother me. I thought it was
It was actually more than two, but that's, you know.
Two major ones.
Two big ones.
I thought it was a good thing. I thought that the diversity was important, not just for touchy-feely, good emotional reasons that we're supposed to feel good about diversity, but because the existence of those two environments, each one was a spur to the other. They were competing with each other for mindshare. I've changed my mind about that in the last 6 months. I think we're entering an early adopter phase at which having a single desktop is more of an advantage than it has been up to now. So I think the market's ready for one of those to go away, and I think that's going to be one of the effects of the Novell acquisitions.
How long do you anticipate that taking?
Oh,
happen this year.
I think it's going to happen sometime this year, pretty clearly.
And when you say, like, gone, I mean, you're not. It'll never really fade away. I mean, there's.
No, there will always be a tiny hardcore of KDE people who are occasionally cranking out releases.
But you're talking, like, as a major commercial?
That's right. I think that day is over.
Thanks. I have one other important story that I don't know was mentioned either, but I really think that the emergence of Grok law.
Oh, yeah.
It's a website. I mean, that whole thing, I mean, those of us who are here that are in the, quote, traditional media, I mean, hang on to your, you know, seats because, you know, that is an example of how really good grassroots research and analysis can go. And, you know, I've talked to Pamela Jones, and she's really very concerned about, you know, how... You know, the accuracy of what she's doing, you know, how she's being portrayed in the media as an expert, you know, and I told her I think she's doing a terrific job.
She is.
And she's keeping herself honest. She calls mistakes the rare times she makes them, you know. And I really think that Grok Law, you know, is probably the really only good thing that has come out of Stowe, and I hope she continues, you know, to keep doing this kind of legal analysis even after the Stowe suit, you know, eventually goes away.
I hope she finds a purpose.
Yeah.
Beyond Stowe.
I was going to nominate later on in the second half. I was going to nominate Grok Law as the single most important website in many years. This is very, very important. Lawrence Lessig tried to do some things early on, and of course was, you know, he's so busy it's hard for, you know, But now all of a sudden we have this website which is focused on strictly on the legal aspects of open source and more focused than anything else we've had. And this is probably the finest website I've seen in a long time.
Well, there's a good reason for it, too. Pam does an exceptionally fine job. But Brian, you can corroborate this because I'm sure you've had exactly the same experience that I've had with her. She contacts everybody inside of Linux Media and is very open with the flow of information and an incredibly pleasant and enjoyable person to deal with, and so you can't help but help her. She's just one of those people you want to help out.
Yeah.
And a lot of people help her out with her research and have really pitched in and helped her, because just look at the volume of the research that is done there. It's just mind-boggling. I think that the community has stepped up and has supported her as well as they have.
I think this is the best positive community outlet for the the most positive outlet for the community in this situation. I mean, it basically, if we didn't have something like GrokLaw, we would just be basically filling up Slashdot and Linux Today and NewsForge and all the other sites with, basically non-constructive flames.
Well, hey, that's not quite true. Rob Landley and I, late last year, pioneered doing the kind of legal analysis that gets done on GrokLaw. You remember our original white paper on the FCO lawsuit?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
There's some evidence that the community can produce legal analysis that's better than Slashdot flamage. We've done it. But the flip side is that I'll tell you that Rob and I are very relieved that somebody else has picked up that job and is doing it better than we did.
Yeah, and certainly not to take away from any other positive efforts.
Yeah, but now we have it all in one place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to stop people like Eric from contributing to GrokLaw. I mean, we now have a home for it. And we can go to EFF and all the other advocacy groups where we get analysis. The thing is, we now have GrokLaw as a center point to focus on this very, very, very important aspect of our business.
Well, and she does quiz me for stuff on Linux history, by the way.
Yep.
So you don't see my byline on there, but I am contributing.
And she's asked me about some kernel stuff recently, so she's good about, like Jeff said, she's good about contacting people and getting what she doesn't know, straight. So I have to commend her. So those are my important stories.
Brian, we need to move on, so I've got to ask you one direct question.
Sure.
Have a prediction for 2004, like Eric just flirted us with the KDE prediction.
Okay. I've got one that is not quite as earth-shattering as Eric's, but I was thinking about this today and looking at the recent SUSE and Zimian moves by Novell. And then today, I kind of had it confirmed when, there was a report out that, Red Hat's looking to raise some funds. I'm wondering, and I could be so far off on this that, if people call me on it, then they're welcome to hit me over the head with a stick. But I think that Red Hat may be looking to purchase another distribution company, and if they're really serious about opening up the European channel, I think they might actually go out and buy Mandrake.
Mandrake, the French one.
What? Who?
The French effort.
Exactly.
You're overlooking something, I think.
I may be, and if I am, please tell me.
The structural thing that I think that you're overlooking is that I don't think Red Hat particularly wants to be a distribution company in the traditional sense anymore.
But they do want to have a European foothold. I mean, they've said that to
some
people
in the press. Is a consumer-focused distribution the right way to do that? I don't think so.
I don't know. We have to see. I mean, Mandrake's made some moves in the enterprise arena.
Yeah, but in a lot of ways, Mandrake is actually looking in the exact opposite direction.
Yeah, I think so, too.
their latest statement too in response to Red Hat's Fedora move, where they came out with their 8 principles or whatever they called it, which basically said, you know, we're staying free at all costs forever, amen. You know, that's
wow, that's sounding like Debian.
yeah,
really. I mean, it's in a lot of ways it would be like Red Hat trying to co-opt Debian or something like this. It doesn't fit. Although I do agree with Brian that you know, they may want something similar to that to increase their presence out there, but I don't know what that candidate is.
I know, Slackware.
So I'm going to propose a different scenario.
Okay.
You know that I've actually been on the board of directors of a company that went on an acquisition binge.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm familiar with the kind of thinking that goes on. And if I were on the board of directors of Red Hat, I wouldn't be looking at Linux distribution companies because they're selling the wrong product in the wrong market from the point of view of my expansion plans. No, what I'd be looking for is some kind of boutique data processing consultancy with good European reach.
Okay.
And that is?
I don't know. I can't think of any examples because I don't know that market over there.
Yeah, neither do I.
But I'd be looking for a consultancy with a general IT consultancy with a good reputation, small enough to be bought, and with significant internal interest in Linux.
MySQL.
You know, that's actually a pretty good candidate. Yeah.
You know, you may have hit it.
Yeah, that would help their product line a whole lot, too.
And MySQL is a phenomenally good product.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's recently rated as the most stable, one of the most stable products in the market.
And it's got a license Red Hat would love.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
They've got a really good set of licenses. And by the way, the MySQL guys are a really, really incredible group. They're really cool.
Well, Brian, thank you. We got to bring a couple other people in.
Sure.
So, but hang out if you like. Dennis,
okay.
There?
Greetings.
Dennis Powell from Linux in Maine. How are
hey,
you?
Hey, Dennis.
Greetings. Reasonably well, but for having been diagnosed today with pneumonia.
Ooh.
Oh.
So if you have the flu, stay inside and don't talk to anybody, and you may not get infected with anything else.
There you go.
Boy, it's been a year, and it's going to be a year. The things that, well, of course, everybody's touched on SCO, and SCO is the big story, and the second big story, of course, is Novell. There are some other things that are kind of minor cleanup things, and one of them is the fact that I would have really liked to have seen a whole lot more commercial apps brought over to Linux, both on the enterprise and frankly for some desktop stuff. I am using and absolutely loving a little German word processor called TextMaker. It is magnificent. It costs $50. It's closed source and it's perfect. And it just blows the socks off everything else for word processing. For Linux, if you're doing serious stuff like writing books and so on. And it would be, I think also that a lot of adopters of Linux would feel more comfortable if for their essential applications there was somebody they could get on the phone right now. And that's available in commercial apps.
Yep. No arguments there.
And as to KDE, I think it's probably right that things are going to change. I know some KDE people who work for SUSE who are living in mortal fear right now, and with good reason.
And it
could well end up kind of going off into an area where rather than having the sort of unified development that it has now, it could fall more into some of the inconsistencies that we saw in very early versions of KDE where just, you know, people go off in their own directions and do things and so on. And that worries me a little bit because, for instance, in like OpenOffice, if you compare the graphics tools in OpenOffice to those of, say, StarOffice 5.2, that area has been kind of left out. I don't know whether just nobody wanted to do it or what, but things that lack sort of a unifying leadership, it seems like, don't really develop in a way that necessarily is something that the end user is real eager to have. And so I can kind of see KDE sliding off into that direction, which to me is very, very sad.
Yeah, well, I hate to put it in these terms, but you could have predicted that something dire was going to happen with the SUSE situation. But to compound it all, and I really don't want to, you know, lay blame at one person or one group's feet, but if Bruce Perens succeeds with User Linux, it will kill KDE for sure.
Because that's GNOME-based?
It's GNOME-based.
It's not like GNOME-based. It is emphatically
GNOME-based. Yeah. Yeah. Bruce Perens has said that he doesn't think it's wise to go to two different desktops, and just focusing on one would be sufficient.
Yeah, I've had some clashes with him in the past, as you all know, but I think he called this one right.
I've never used KDE. I've always used GNOME. In fact, I don't even necessarily use all of GNOME. I use Enlightenment still, so that's how far back I go. But I am uncomfortable with the thought of KDE disappearing.
Me too.
Yeah, so am I. I'm not making this prediction because I want KDE per KDE to disappear. I mean, I would be just as happy probably with a world that where KDE was the single desktop environment.
Yeah.
But I'm just looking at the market trends and thinking it doesn't look good.
I prefer KDE personally, and I would really be distraught to see it happen.
I tell you, if I were going to move to a GUI mail client, it would be KMail. Some of their stuff is just beautiful.
God, I still use MH.
Well, I use MUT because I don't want to lose the reflexes in my fingers that allow me to read mail in a terminal window.
Getting back to Dennis. Dennis, do you have any predictions for the coming year?
Yeah, pretty dire ones, actually. I think that we are going to see the end of any notion of freedom on the Internet as we know it. We have a new spam law, which if you were to sit down and design a spam law destined to fail, this would be it.
Yep.
And so people are going to continue to get the same amount of equally objectionable spam, and they're going to say, wait a minute, you promised you were getting rid of spam, and so new and more draconian measures are going to be brought in, and they are going to eliminate any notion of certainly internet anonymity or anything like that. Everything is not only going to be traceable, but is going to be regularly traced. That is a big thing that's going to arise. Another thing that's going to arise, because it's already hit us, is that this is going to be the year of the lawyers. Very few people know this, but right now Linux in Maine is being sued for $20 million by the former proprietor of Loki Software for some stories that we did that were absolutely true, that were in fact taken from documents in the public record, and it is going to cost us tens of thousands of dollars to defend this lawsuit. We're in Connecticut, he's in California, and it's a horrible mess. And we're going to see more and more of that, and God help us if Stowe gets anything like a settlement out of the IBM thing, because then the floodgates will be open.
The settlement that Stowe should get is a huge laugh by the CEO of IBM.
Well, yeah, but that may not end up being what it is, Arnie.
I know, but you know, I hear these people arguing about that, and they always say that, well, what if, but you know,
Well, but you're confusing courts with justice.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Arnie, I cannot tell you how many times I get majorly censored by various publications. And I mean majorly. So
I understand that.
Okay.
It's happened to me, too.
Yeah, well, that's the reason why you're here, if you recall.
Yeah.
It's because of a disagreement between you and Dwight, I believe it was. But whatever. I have written a number of articles very recently that have not seen the light of day because no one will publish them, even though they're factually true and factually supported. No one wants to get sued because of the lawyer money.
That's right.
And so I think Dennis has got something. I think that we've sort of lost the power of the First Amendment, people are lining up to start suing web portals.
And bear in mind that the Supreme Court right now is not exactly in First Amendment preservation mode.
No. Nor is Congress.
That's right.
Which is too bad.
Boy, that's a dire one. I hope you've got a good lawyer.
So do I.
David Boyce should become available soon.
He would not be my first choice. He's about to be disbarred in Florida, as I understand it.
That's what I've heard. That's what I very recently heard.
No, he's taking up a residence for the Head Cheese Council.
Well, we're supposed to have Joe Barr joining us, but
hello.
Joe, is that you?
That's me.
Oh.
Joe Barr, welcome.
I don't see you on my list.
You don't count, Joe.
Here.
You don't exist.
Nope.
Oh, I'm not on
You're
the list?
You're an unperson. Person.
I can leave and come back, maybe. I may have come in under the radar.
That was Bob Young's book.
Oh, that's right, it was.
Well, hey, Joe.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a story that you would feel is a significant story of 2003 and a prediction for 2004 for us?
Yes, I do. And in fact, they dovetail together very nicely. And I'd like to say that damn geek with the gun stole my top story.
That would be me. Which one was it?
I had two top stories. Of course, one number two story is SCO. That was the second most important story. The most important story, in my humble opinion, is that SCO's action has not chilled the Linux market.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No.
I don't believe that the SCO action has anything to do with pumping up the SCO stock price. I think that's a side effect. I think the SCO action is controlled elsewhere, and its purpose is to kill Linux.
Not exactly news.
So you're on the Microsoft theme.
I can create conspiracies where none have dared to go before. And in fact,
now
I have.
Now he tells us.
I have a black belt in conspiracy.
We're shocked,
yeah.
Joe. We're absolutely shocked.
I could not imagine that, Joe.
Okay, for next year, for this year, actually, 2004, if I can jump from last year's news to this year's, it's going to be a lot worse. And several people have touched on this before. I think it's that damn geek with a gun again.
Hail Eris, Joe.
Microsoft has never been roughed up this badly before in their competitive history. Microsoft doesn't like the idea of competition. They usually manage to kill those people who dare to compete before they get close to being really competitive.
Too late.
It's too late. I expect Microsoft to have more and worse tricks ahead. I think they'll try and get Linux or open source or the GPL declared illegal.
I thought that's what they thought they were doing with the SCO deal.
Yeah,
it may yet happen from that.
Likely.
They may try and have it declared illegal for government use in whatever governments they can get that passed, and they have tremendous power in governments.
How can you get a license schema made illegal. I don't buy it.
Campaign contributions.
made illegal, maybe. All right, maybe not made illegal. Made unenforceable.
Maybe not even that. All they have to do is make it unmarketable.
Yes, which is really what they want.
Which is only the only thing they really need. I mean, it can still be legal, but if they convince everybody it's fattening, there's another problem.
Now, they're going to go beyond, my prediction is this, they're going to go beyond every dirty trick they've ever done in their history before, because they're in a position they've never been before. They're getting beat.
Well, yeah, Joe, but I've thought about this a lot, and there's, as far as I can tell, there's really only one trick they can pull that they haven't yet.
I got a list. Yes.
Okay, what's on your list?
A Microsoft version of Linux would be number one.
Hmm.
Buying key kernel hackers would be number two.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one are likely to happen.
Well, I'm guessing.
Now, let's hear the rest of the list. I'm really curious.
I've got two more.
What if they gave Linus Torvalds $4 billion?
Yeah, or something equally, obnoxious.
I mean, what if? I mean, I've often thought about that. Is what if Bill Gates invited Linus over for lunch one day and handed him a check that said $4 or $10 billion on the check? He could do it. He could do it.
I think we saw one very, very sophisticated attack on the kernel this past year. I think we'll see more.
So what are your other two things you think they might pull? I'm curious if either of them...
One of them was sophisticated attacks on the kernel itself. And the last one...
How so?
Oh, you mean like a crack attack?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Backdoored.
Yeah.
The last, because to destroy Linux's reputation for security... And the last one would be the removal of Torvalds.
Yeah.
Okay, you left out the one that I think is most plausible, and the only one I think they could really make work. Massive patent attack.
That's something that looms on the horizon.
Yeah.
According to Mr. Perrins.
As for your other scenarios, I quite honestly. I don't know Linus Torvalds as intimately as some people do, but I've hung out with him, I've had breakfast with him, I've talked about kernel things with him, and if Bill Gates offered him $4 billion, Linus would say, what the hell do I need with more money? Go fuck yourself.
Well, I'm throwing out
so
wild speculation.
That's not
going to
work.
But make Linus a point
Linus,
that they're going
Linus
to do things
price.
This year that they have not done before. And
Linus
it's going to
has
catch
a price,
everybody by surprise.
But the price is not denominated in money, so I'm not worried about that scenario.
But he wants Bill Gates' genitals on a platter? Is that...
No, Linus doesn't care about Microsoft. He's
no.
That, said that time and time again.
And I believe he's quite sincere about that.
And he gives every reason to be completely
However,
sincere about it.
Linus doesn't care about winning in that sense. However, something I can tell you about is that he would hate to lose.
Yeah.
There's a subtle but important difference between those two positions. It's not necessary to Linus that other people that he win and other people lose, but it's necessary to him that he not lose.
Well, Linus won't be driving what happens. Bill Gates will be driving what happens.
In what sense?
He's going to be doing the attack.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go over your four scenarios here. Let's see if
let's come up with some other scenarios.
Let's do a threat analysis. The patent threat is serious. Buying Linus is something that that Bill Gates would not try at. And I actually think for all the low opinion we have of the guy, I actually think that Bill Gates is too smart to believe that would succeed.
Yeah, he would know that.
He would know better than to think that would succeed.
Let's step back for a second, because the silly examples I threw out there off the top of my head are not well thought out.
Yeah.
They're merely to illustrate that we're going to see things that we have not seen before.
Right. Okay, so that's fine.
So the big message is 2004, MS is going to try again to kill Linux.
In itself, Joe, that's a useless prediction. The reason it's useless is because you can't do anything about it. Predictions that Microsoft is going to try something are only useful if they're accompanied by a threat model that we can react against.
Do you have a template for that? Can you email me a template?
You know, that's an I don't know if I do have a written template. Where I'm coming from here is I know something about the way intelligence analysts work.
I am a retired intelligence analyst, by the way.
Ah,
I was with the NSA for 7 years.
Then you know more about threat modeling than I do.
Oh, okay.
So don't just tell us Microsoft is going to try something. What's your threat model?
You may hit the nail on the head.
I've seen, you may think I don't know what I'm talking about, but I've seen the threat matrix on TV.
Right.
So isn't that a threat? Isn't that a threat model?
Which threat matrix are you speaking of?
The television show.
Okay, I don't watch television, so we're talking across.
And my credentials are better.
Yeah,
because I've seen this show.
Right. Okay. Fine.
Joe, you're great.
Okay, so here's what a threat model is. Since evidently our ex-NSA guy, if he knows, isn't telling. A threat model is a set of scenarios graded by possibility, specific attacks and variations of attacks that you think are plausible, and which you then evaluate for probability against the enemy's known capabilities.
Okay.
It would seem to me that the likelihood here would have to do with some kind of congressional action that would describe, without naming, Linux and the various BSDs and fundamentally make them illegal for some security or copyright reason.
Right. Okay. So that's one. That is one family of military planners call these cases. This is one family of cases to put in your threat model.
I like that one, by the way.
I think if I could chime in, I think that if Microsoft does do something, whatever they do, whatever case they use, it's going to be something that's going to be relatively covert. They're not going to want their fingerprints showing on whatever they do. They like to do this by remote, because if they attract the attention of the Department of Justice again, you know.
What will they do?
I know.
They didn't do anything last time.
They'll have to buy the whole department again.
Exactly. Well, right. But, you know, whether you, obviously the Department of Justice did nothing the first time around.
Right.
Okay?
Or the second.
Or the second. But it did mar public perception of Microsoft. It changed the way that they looked at that company.
I think you're
not
right.
Not radically, but it was a subtle enough shift to scare Redmond out of their mind.
Right. I think you're right.
It's out of their control.
And one of the things that we need to fold into our threat model is the fact that in post-internet conditions, covertness at this kind of attack is very, very difficult.
Right. I mean, we've already looked at things. We saw them buy that license from SCO.
Right.
And we all said, hey, wait a minute.
If they try to do something covert, it will be exposed and it will fail. So the cases to rank big in the threat model are things that they can do openly.
Yeah.
Well, or else they could hide behind organizations such as the RIAA.
Yeah, but what I'm telling you is we live in an environment now where connections are of that kind are very easy to discover and publicize. And they have to factor that into their strategic planning.
Uh-huh. So you're saying that they're not even going to bother trying to be...
I'm saying I would include a few cases like that in a developed threat model, but I would assign them low probabilities.
Well, let me just throw something in here, Eric. Let's go back to Joe's conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
If he is indeed correct in this regard, that... As many people have speculated that Bill Gates' hand is up Donald McBride's ass, they may well have actually pulled off a part of the scenario that you're saying is unlikely.
But everybody knows Microsoft is funding McBride.
But they're not getting any negative. Everyone in the Linux community talks about it. They're not getting any negative business off of it. You're not seeing the IT press saying, you know, where's the Skok money coming from, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I don't know,
Excuse
Russell.
Me, I think I have seen that.
Yeah, I saw that at least early on. A lot of people...
You saw a couple lines of speculation. It's not in the minds of IT people.
Okay, that'll give you.
You have this huge action going on, and no one's talking about Microsoft and SCO.
On the other hand, this is a question I get asked when journalists call me for comment on the SCO lawsuit.
Right, and it was even in Wired. Okay,
yeah.
So I think you really do have to take into consideration that the SEC is, you know, and the Department of Justice, not necessarily for the SCO issue, but they are looking at Microsoft again. And, you know, I know you guys laughed at, you know, well, they didn't do anything last time, but they're not likely to do anything again. Well, that's just not true. Eventually, the government has to do something because the business that's doing the law breaking is damaging the economy overall, and so eventually they do break up AT&T. And you know, if I have no doubt that if Microsoft does something public, and this is where I agree with the covert side. If Microsoft does something public, the SEC and the Department of Justice are all over Microsoft's ass in a heartbeat.
So that's, yeah. And you have to look at, when you construct a threat model, as much as possible, you have to look at the threat scenarios from the point of view of your adversary, not from your own point of view. So one of the things, as he says, one of the things you have to factor into the covert strategies is how Microsoft will perceive the risk of discovery.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't have time to do this, but somebody with experience as an intelligence analyst should actually sit down and game this out and publish it.
If you can get away from the television.
Well, I watch fair and balanced news, and then I watch reruns of the Threat Matrix.
There you go.
It's what keeps America safe.
You know, I've never heard of
it. Wait a minute. He's going to, Joe Barr, are you fishing for a job at the hometown security department?
Man,
I betcha.
Am I missing something here? Because I've never heard of this show.
I was doing good watching Enterprise. My God, my life is empty.
Huh?
Sorry.
I'm confused. Clearly, I'm deficient in my pop culture.
Dennis Powell.
Yes.
Can I get contact information from you after the show?
Well, absolutely. Or if you want, you can just email me.
I'll do that.
Okay. One thing that I think is kind of interesting as pertains to Microsoft, and I think that Bruce Perens hit it absolutely on the head in connection with this new round of Microsoft ads, has to do with the fact that, as he put it, the IBM ads for Linux are aimed at the guy who wants to save his company, whereas the Microsoft ads are aimed at the IT guy who wants to save his job. And the fact is that the IT community wants to keep Microsoft, and for two reasons. First, it's familiar. Second, it's somebody to blame. And both of those are really powerful. I know a whole bunch of people who are just raking in vast amounts of money, cranking out little Visual Basic apps for various enterprises. And they live in mortal terror of ever having to do any actual real programming. And I think that these Microsoft ads aimed at telling the IT people, hey guys, gravy train's about to grind to a halt if you don't do something, is going to get Linux bad-mouthed big time in a whole lot of enterprises. And I think that approach is something that passes muster with the Department of Justice, and that is going to have a certain amount of effect.
Well, we'll see. I don't know.
Rob Limo is in the
yes, he did.
IRC.
Rob Limo just joined the IRC. I'd like to throw a couple more threads out because we're already at 17 after the hour, and we are running down. We've got about 15 minutes to go. But this may not seem like a big deal to anybody as an important story of the year, but I think it was tremendously important because of the casual nature in which we had the cycle of the 2.4 release and then more recently the 2.6 release. When they're coming along on these steady pace and really almost as a matter of fact, oh yes, and by the way, and I'm quoting Linus directly, oh yes, and by the way, we just released the new kernel today. That in of itself should, I believe, show the wider IT community that there really is some very, very solid organizational development that is come into the kernel, the kernel hacker community, and that it really is a stable and focused entity. And I don't know about you, but I think that this was the release of the 2.6 kernel, I think in itself was a huge event.
I would predict, I think it's an easy prediction for any of us to make. Yeah, I would predict that the 2.6 kernel will be one of the best ones, and will leave the competition in the dust.
Yeah, I think that I can definitely go behind that.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was talking to some people from SGI yesterday, and they're just they're just really excited about it, and they're just ready to take off with it,
From what I understand, it's pretty stable, too.
Yeah.
Comparatively speaking, for 2.0 releases. They've already got the 2.6.1 out.
Yeah.
With nothing major, nothing really bad.
Okay, another one that I'll throw out here. People don't seem to be too excited about my revelation of the 2.6 kernel. So, last year at this time, we were all the people who were on the show that night, were all talking about 2003 being the year of the desktop. And although it may have taken 9 months for it to happen, it really did happen this year during the fourth quarter. Critical mass on the desktop made huge leaps forward, and it's inevitable that 2004 is going to continue to grow on the desktop. So, other than the desktop, does anybody see another major trend jumping out in terms of a large adoption segment?
Yeah, actually, I kind of do. And that is in a kind of weird area, but it mortises nicely with the Novell acquisition and with some of the stuff IBM's doing and so on. And that comes from, of all places, this is company.com, which has a lot of nifty little desktop apps, but their big deal is IDEs and compilers for all manner of languages that are in, chiefly anymore, in business use. And if enterprise Linux takes off, it's entirely possible that their compilers and IDEs and so on would ease that transition. I'm kind of surprised that, maybe talks are underway, that Novell hasn't bought them up, frankly.
So you're...
Yeah, go ahead.
So what you're thinking of is that some of the big buzz this year is going to be legacy conversion.
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting.
That would be interesting too. Yeah.
I have a different suggestion to make. I think this is going to be the year that government adoptions around the world become routine rather than sporadic.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
That's easy. It's already happening.
Yeah, we've seen a fairly steady ramp up in that over the last 18 months.
And it's not going to be something easily to detect because this is something that where governments typically have a DP departments with developers and stuff, and it could be already happening, and wouldn't know about it because, like for instance, the court system has been running Unix, the federal court system has been running Unix in the United States for years.
And they're switching to Linux now.
Yeah, yeah, and it could happen. It could happen without anybody. No one says, "Oh, by the way, we're switching to Linux."
As right. Rob Leno pointed out a couple of weeks ago, a lot of government entities don't want people to know they're doing stuff with Linux because they get tremendous heat when it's discovered.
Yeah, and they just do it.
Yeah, that happened in Massachusetts when they came out with that. You know,
who wants Bill Gates breathing down your neck?
I hate to be a cynic about that too, but I'm hoping that a lot of these government studies and whatnot are genuine and not, you know, really intended to be, you know, price leverages.
You know,
against Microsoft.
It's sweet for us either way.
Yeah.
Because if they're genuine, then we get Linux adoption. Now, if they're just price levers, what that does is it forces down Microsoft's margins. And it brings the day of reckoning for them closer. So it's sweet for us either way. I don't care whether they're faking or not.
Doesn't matter.
Because the effect on them, ultimately, at like a two, three-year time frame, the effect is the same.
Here's one that's a little bit off the wall, but somewhat in the same vein, and that is the fact that with the Iraqi business and with a whole bunch of stuff going on in the Mideast, it could well be that Hancom, of all people, the Korean company, which a couple of years ago undertook to do Linux distributions in a multitude of Middle Eastern languages, could actually get revived, and we could see an enormous Linux presence in the Mideast.
Hmm. Well, it would seem it would be logical because there's already an enormous presence surrounding the entire Mideast. It's you know, all throughout Russia. It's in Israel. It's in every Asian country. So it's logical to assume that would probably happen.
And there's another point to this. We touched base on this a few weeks ago, before the holidays. And that is the amount of internationalization, localization that's happened in the open source community just cannot be done in proprietary.
Yep.
Just can't be done. That's why we'll have the world. I mean, us one company just cannot translate their operating system into 60 languages very easily.
Tamil, Telugu, Malayalam, Ainu,
you Greek, betcha.
Albanian, Quechua.
I want it in Sanskrit.
You'll get it.
Say nothing of Esperanto.
Yeah, well, don't forget Klingonese.
Easy. That's just Latin, too.
Bless you.
I mean, I bet you Linux will be... Linux will be translated into, will be localized into Klingonese before Microsoft gets anywhere near the number of some of the languages.
There's a detail about this, though. Yes, it's true that Linux can get better localization and internationalization than anything else because of the distributed nature of the way we do it. It's all done by local teams who are really highly motivated. On the other hand, the direct economic impact of this fact is actually minimal because for most of the 4,000 or so surviving languages in the world, there basically isn't any computing market. There probably are not more than 20 languages at the outside in which there is actually significant demand for a localized operating system. But putting it that way actually underestimates the impact because for a lot of the potential markets, it isn't so much a matter of economic impact as it is a matter of national pride. This is something I learned firsthand when I went, for example, the two times that I went to Korea.
Well, we are up to 27 minutes after the hour, gentlemen, so we've only got a few more minutes. Let me run around the panel real quickly and get any last comments you may want to get in. Why don't we, Kevin, we haven't heard anything from you. Why don't we start with you tonight, Kevin?
Yeah, I would just have to agree that I think the changes at Red Hat were probably the most significant in actual affecting actual Linux installation. Real interesting to follow and ends up being that people look to change directions real quick to figure out what to do.
Okay. Anything else?
That's the biggest one. I think Go for all of the press it's generating doesn't, at least for the people I've talked to, doesn't seem to be having any real impact in any real decisions.
Yeah, and I don't think it really don't think it will in the long run. Russ, have you got any closing comments?
No, other than the fact that I think 2004 is going to be a hell of a year. Strap on in because it's going to be a wild one.
Alrighty, we'll do so. Arnie.
Yeah, I have to second your opinion, Russ. One of the things I think is going to happen is I think we're going to see further dominance of the embedded market. We're going to see databases become stronger, and I believe we're going to see the SCO suit lose big time.
Well, we'll hope for that at least. Eric, how about you?
Yeah, well, the sinister master plan for world domination is right on schedule, and it's a rising exponential curve.
Brian?
I look for 2004 to see a continuation of the drop of proprietary Unix in the enterprise and scientific arenas. I think that Unix is going to take a much bigger hit than Windows. But they're also going to start seeing their market share eaten away by Linux as well.
Dennis?
I think that one of the more remarkable news events is going to be when it comes to be covered in the national press and in news conferences and so on, just how extensive Linux's penetration into NASA has been. I mean, we've got that little thing on Mars, and it's running on Linux.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, the British one was, but they announced that was the reason why they couldn't get contact is because it's in a crater. Well, I know it's in a crater of its own making, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
and our former NSA person, Joe Barr, do you have a last comment?
Russ spoke for me on his two comments. I agree with him completely. It's going to be another in what seems like a never-ending series of great years for Linux, and it's going to be a very wild one, and thank you very much for asking me to partake in the silliness, because I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, glad you could come.
Come back soon.
I have one final closing comment in terms of a prediction. I'm predicting that 2004 is going to bring us the return of the dot-com bubble.
It starts with SCO.
I'm very serious on this, because I've been talking to a lot of venture capitalists lately, that there has been literally billions of dollars of, I shouldn't say billions, I should say hundreds of billions of dollars that had been pulled out of the market, dumped into CDs. People went into a very conservative mode over the last three or four years, and people are tired of earning 3 or 4%.
And the Dow is over 10 grand again.
Yeah, they're tired of earning 3 or 4%. People want to see those big returns again, and the economy is, without question, heated back up again.
It is humming.
Oh, it is. It's racing, Eric. What, you hit it right on the head.
What a terrible time to be a Democratic presidential candidate.
Yeah. There could be better times, that's for sure. But with the returning economy, the venture capitalists are looking for places to get the market excited and stirred up again. Because that's how they make money. They don't give a damn whether the stock goes up or it goes down. They just want to sell stock and do IPOs. And so I think that is going to have some serious ramifications in terms of the coming year. We've had an opportunity over the last 4 years of seeing some of these survivor companies. Look at Mandrake. Mandrake is in a much better financial footing than they were a year or two ago. Same thing with Red Hat. All of the survivors are doing very, very well.
They're tough, they're lean, and they know how to do business.
And they should, in that kind of an environment, in a dot-com bubble-type environment, they should do very well because they will be lean. And they've experienced how wasting money can come back and can bite you on the ass. And I think it really portends well for all IT firms that have managed to pay their dues and survive through these rough times. I see nothing but good times ahead. And hopefully, Russ, it'll get out to the East Coast pretty soon.
Here.
Well, I'll tell you where it's going to hit. The boom's going to hit last is in the Midwest Rust Belt, which is bad news for some of you.
It has.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, on behalf of the whole panel here, it is 9:34 here in Chicago, so we're going to have to call it a night. I do want to thank all of you for coming on the show tonight, Dennis, Brian, Joe, Eric, our regular panelists, Arnie and Kevin, Russ. I don't know where Doc is. We tried getting him. We'll have him back here next week.
He's in his car somewhere.
Dennis, I'm sending you an email as soon as the show's over.
Okay.
I'd like to thank everybody who's listening for stopping on by. All you people out on the IRC, thanks to you as well. A special thanks goes out to our sponsors of the month. We're being sponsored this month by IDG World Events. They're going to be bringing us into the Linux World Conference and Expo in 2 weeks, as well as people from Real Networks. Real Networks is collaborating with Kevin and I in terms of bringing video to the show very, very shortly. Hopefully within the next 2 or 3 weeks, we will have a video server up and be running Helix alongside of our existing Icecast servers. I don't know how that's going to exactly work out over the course of the next several weeks, but we'll see what happens. It's going to be fun, regardless of how it actually shakes out. So thanks again, everybody, for coming by. We love to have you listen to our show. This year is going to be another great, great year, we're sure. Come back every week. Check us out. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time, or if you're busy, you can always pick it up on the archives. Thank you very much. Make sure you go out and email all of your friends about the Linux Show, and stop by, visit our website, make a donation, become a sponsor, become active, whatever you do. Sign up for our mailing list, at least that. Join our community of participants. Until then, till next week, hey, we're out of here.
time will reach an end. At the gate, it has begun. Over to that coming bend. In their life, in our lives, in some others yet to be. Oh, believe the end time's here. By the same prophecy. By the same prophecy. I am he, the time.